to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here. It's Wednesday, middle of the week, hump day, as it were. And we're cranking up here. Donovan's in the control room, ready to answer the phone. And the number, as always, is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Got a lot of stuff to talk about here today. And starting with the economy, as we always do. Today, the Dow Industrials almost completely erased their gains from yesterday. I mean, yesterday morning, the Dow just exploded upward and just had this really wonderful day, and everybody was saying, yes, the recession's over, the recession's over, the economy is coming back, and blah, blah, blah. And then today, it kind of stayed level for most of the day, and then about 2 hours before the close of the market, it just right off the cliff and went down, and it ended up, I think, about 174 points down. So we're back down to where we were basically as of the end of last week. So, you know, you got to be careful about those bear market surges. And, you know, they were trying to say that this was all because of this consumer confidence report that came out, even though the housing numbers were just an absolute disaster. And the news from pretty much everywhere else is still kind of bad. So there's something very funny about the Dow Industrials, and I think less and less people tend to think it really has any validity in terms of deciding how the economy as a whole is working. And again, my advice to everybody listening to the show is don't take anybody's word for anything, not even mine. Go out into the real world, open your eyes, open your ears, look, listen, use your brain, decide for yourself if the economy is working, decide for yourself if the government's doing a good job. Don't let somebody come by and say, 90% of Americans think you should rub blue mud into your navel. And, you know, because all that's going to happen if you listen to them is you're going to wind up with a blue belly button, and who needs that? Now, some of the news that is not very good, of course, is that because of all the bank closures so far this year, I think we're coming up on 40 so far this year, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is running out of money, which is rather amazing because supposedly a total of $12.8 trillion has been spent, lent, or committed to reviving the economy and the economic stimulus. And I'm starting to scratch my head and wonder, where did it all go? Because the FDIC is running out of money to bail out the banks that are collapsing. And as we reported yesterday, credit card companies have run out of money to loan to us, which is the reason we were sold TARP last September, when they said, got to have TARP pushed through to give these financial companies money to lend back to Americans. Yesterday, we found out Advanta, small business credit cards, they're simply canceling them all. Their funding body that gives them money to support new credit card purchases apparently is quitting. And so all the credit cards, as of the end of this month, will no longer be valid. They're canceled, and it doesn't matter if you were making payments or not, or if you've got good credit or bad. All the credit cards from Advanta for small businesses have been canceled. End of story. Got to start looking for a new credit card there. So with $12.8 trillion, where did it all go? It's $100,000 per American taxpayer, and it's vanished into the void of Wall Street. And we were told that we should just very quietly go along and let them run up this huge debt to dump on us because it was going to fix the economy and get it back on track. We're not seeing it. The automakers are still in trouble. They're still courting bankruptcies. Banks are still closing. Lines of credit have dried up. Housing prices are collapsing. $12.8 trillion. We're in the same mess that we were before. I think we got rooked. I think we absolutely got rooked. And as if things are not bad enough for us out here, the federal government is now putting up a little trial balloon to see how upset we get, by which I mean you should get really upset about this. They're talking about a national-level sales tax. So when you go to the store, you're not only going to be paying your state sales tax on whatever you're buying, you're going to be paying a federal sales tax. Now, a few years ago, they were promoting the idea of a national sales tax as a replacement for the income tax because it would be easier to collect. There'd be less paperwork to deal with. You know, there were a lot of advantages. A lot of people resisted it because this was being put out there to sort of take the focus off the fact that the income tax may not actually be legal. You know, the court transcript from Sullivan versus United States was getting out there. People were beginning to realize. In fact, it's even mentioned in Aaron Russo's From Freedom to Fascism, where a federal judge in a court case admitted in court, in the court record, that the 16th Amendment is not actually ratified. And more people are becoming aware of that. So in a desperate move to replace an illegal tax with a legal one, they floated this national sales tax. And a lot of people said, wait a minute, let's see what we've got now, whether it's legal or not, before we get the double shuffle flim flam, you know, and have something swapped in on us that we really don't have any rights about. And so it kind of died. Now they brought it back. But this time it is not a replacement for the income tax. It's in addition to. Folks, the government can't make their own money. I mean, they can't earn it. They can make it. They can print it up. And I'm going to get to that in just a minute. The government doesn't make anything or sell anything or produce anything. Its only source of revenue is to take money from you and I and from the teachers and from the doctors and from the bricklayers and from all the people in America who make the country actually run. That's their only source of revenue. So they're running out of money. They've borrowed themselves into a black hole of debt. In fact, the government debt is so great that all of the income tax we're paying right now doesn't even cover the interest. That's why the debt is spiraling completely out of control. Folks, there's only one possible outcome for the current financial situation of the United States government. But the boys and girls in Washington, D.C. don't want the party to end. And so their only solution is find a way to take more money from the American people. We're losing our jobs. A lot of us we're making about half of what we were making 3 years ago. Those of us running small businesses, we don't have any clients or customers anymore. We're just barely hanging on right now. Actually, a lot of us aren't. A lot of businesses are closing. And at this point, the government's solution to fix the economy is to put more taxes on us. Because, I mean, never mind that we're already paying all this huge income tax and excise and tariff and all these hidden taxes on taxes on taxes. Now they want to put a carbon tax on top of all of us. And they're talking about additional gasoline taxes and now a national sales tax. You know the old story about the straw that breaks the camel's back? I think we're about three straws past that already. And no, double shuffle flim flam is not in the dictionary. I just sort of made that up myself on the spur of the moment. People in the chat room are asking about what I'm talking about. But here's the situation. The government is just going to go on finding reasons to take money from you as long as you let them get away with it. And this is the newest one. There's going to be a national sales tax. They're talking about an internet tax. They're going to, you know, there are jurisdictions that are already talking about a rain tax. I mean, that's how the government is going to solve its economic woes. It's going to transfer all of its debts onto you. It sees nothing wrong in driving ordinary Americans down into abject poverty, Palestinian level, if by doing so it prolongs their time in Sodom on the Potomac. And that's just absolutely the way it is. That is absolutely the way it is. And you've got to start dealing with that reality. Now, getting back to currency here. The reason we're in a recession is very simple. The Federal Reserve, the central bank, the private bank, it's a private bank. It's not really federal. It's no more federal than Federal Express. That bank, every time it puts out a unit of currency, the Federal Reserve note, it represents a loan from the central bank to the government and people of the United States. And the instant that first Federal Reserve note goes out, more money is owed than is actually in existence. So this process of periodic recession and depression is inherently built into the design of the central banking system. This is why Thomas Jefferson warned that a private bank issuing the public currency was a greater threat to our liberties than any foreign army. And Thomas Jefferson was very, very smart about that kind of thing. And yet here we are with a private central bank issuing the public currency and charging us for it. And it's not like they've put their own money into it. They're just printing it up as they go along. It's all a paper shuffle. It's legalized counterfeiting is what's going on. Now, here's the part that you need to think about. We're already seeing places around the United States start to issue their own currency for local community use to keep the, you know, their own economies kind of isolated from the runaway inflation that everybody's expecting. Oh, my goodness, how time flies when we're having fun. All right, we're going to take a break here for some commercials. When we come back, I'm going to talk about a possible solution to our economic problems and why Barack Obama is too much of a coward to ever do it. We'll be right back.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about currency. We're talking about the economy. We're talking about an economy that is being strangled by the accumulated compound interest of a central issuing bank. We were warned by Thomas Jefferson never to allow this happen. We've had it happen twice before. In both cases, we had strong presidents who were willing to basically say, okay, we're calling this off. This isn't working for the ordinary people. It's making a bunch of bankers incredibly wealthy on the backs of ordinary working Americans. It's enslaving them. And, you know, through paper, you know, we don't have chains of steel. We have chains of paper and chains of rules. And everybody's faith that this all actually means somebody. Now, here's the reason. Here's the way to fix the U.S. economy right now. Even though the Federal Reserve has a legal right to counterfeit, to just print up money all that they want, the United States federal government still retains the right granted to it by the Constitution to issue their own currency. The Treasury Department still has the legal right, when so authorized by the president, to start issuing currency, which is legal tender inside the United States. And this money issued directly by the Treasury and not going through the Federal Reserve does not have a debt base to it. It's not bearing interest to the bankers. It is free for the use of ordinary Americans to conduct their transactions and trade. It's a unit of value to facilitate trade. That's what money was originally supposed to be. This idea that all money in circulation has to be borrowed from a central bank, that is the whole crux of the scam that is the Federal Reserve. And there is precedent for this. We have had two presidents who issued their own currency to free the country from the accumulating compound interest of central banks. Unfortunately, they were both shot and killed shortly after doing that. The first was Abraham Lincoln, who issued his greenbacks to pay for the Civil War without running up 30% interest debt to the banks. And the second, of course, was John F. Kennedy and his U.S. notes that were pulled from circulation almost even before the body was cold. Now, over in Germany, Adolf Hitler, the reason that he was Time Magazine's Man of the Year in 1938, he turned Germany's economy around. Coming out of World War I and the Weimar Republic, they had hyperinflation to such a huge extent. I mean, we've all seen the pictures. Wheelbarrows full of banknotes just to buy a loaf of bread. I mean, that is how incredibly out of control the inflation was. And the way Hitler solved it was, he said to the banks, we'll take over the making of money for Germany. And he issued his own currency based on an arbitrarily defined unit of value, in this case, a unit of labor. And he put them into circulation. And once the German economy was free of having to pay interest to the banks on the money they're using to conduct business, Germany's economy turned around 180 degrees and just exploded into a powerhouse. And that's what everybody was applauding in 1938. Hitler had turned Germany's economy around. It was going like gangbusters. So, international bankers declared an economic war on Hitler before anybody else realized, hey, this is a really good system they've got going there. And, of course, that war eventually mutated into a real bloody blood and guts war. And that's probably just a coincidence, too. But you get my drift here. It is legal, and it is not without precedent for the federal government of the United States to start issuing their own currency operating outside the Federal Reserve, for the benefit of we, the American people, to try and get businesses and jobs and inventions and products to try and get the economy going again without having to be automatically giving a piece of every action to the bank. Because that's when you have a currency that is dependent upon a private central bank for its existence, then that bank is basically collecting a piece of the action. It's like the old mafia thing, you know, whatever you're doing here. You got to buy, you got a grocery, we get a piece of the action. And that's the way the system is right now. Before the Federal Reserve, banks were optional in your life because the money was issued by the government. And you worked or you had a business and you took your money and you paid your employees and you bought supplies and you did everything. And you could do all of that without involving the bank. And so the bank couldn't make money off of what you were doing. after the Federal Reserve System, where everything is forced through the banks now. And look how hard they're pushing for the cashless society. They're trying to push everything through those little plastic cards. So the bank gets everything routed through it. All of the money is constantly circulating through the bank, and the bank skims off a tiny percentage as a fee. I'd rather live my life without a bank, to be very honest at this point, considering the damage they've caused. And it is within the law for the federal government to allow us to do that. All they have to do is revive Kennedy's U.S. notes or Lincoln's greenbacks. And it is legal. It is a proven formula for success for reviving the economy. Why won't they do it? Of course, we know why they won't do it. They're owned by the Federal Reserve. And they're reminded of the bullet holes in the last two presidents who tried to do this. Like I said, just a coincidence. It's only a coincidence, of course. But those bullet holes are very real. So, something to think about. Our government, you know, I mean, yes, audit the Fed's never going to happen. It doesn't matter how many co-sponsors they get. The Federal Reserve will never allow this to happen. They'll start a world war before they allow themselves to be audited, because the instant the Federal Reserve is audited completely, it is going to be made apparent to Americans how many times they have actually repaid the entire national debt in interest over the last 30 years. If we weren't being charged interest for the use of the money, we would have paid off the national debt long ago. And an audit is going to make that clear to everybody. So it's not going to happen. We can argue for it. We can lobby for it. We can agitate for it. We can demand it, and I think we should. But as a matter of practicality, the Federal Reserve, they'll do whatever it takes to make sure it doesn't happen. They'll even burn down the Central Federal Reserve Bank and say, oh, sorry, all the paperwork is in there. You can count on that. You can absolutely count on that. We've got an economist out here basically saying, let me get his name here. He's basically saying we should waterboard the Federal Reserve, because they're out there loaning trillions and trillions of dollars, which you are expected to repay, and they're not telling us who they're loaning the money to. They're telling us in general terms, yes, we put out $3 trillion here and $4 trillion there and everything, but they're refusing to tell us who got the money and why. Elizabeth Warren of the Congressional Oversight Panel has just said we have no idea what they're doing with the money. We have no idea whatsoever what they're doing with the money. And we're obligated, we are told at least, and I guess it's only true if we believe it, we're told that we have to pay it all back somewhere down the road if whoever got the money doesn't pay it back. And folks, take a look at all these companies going out of business and all these corporations. How many of them are really paying back the money? Anything that's being repaid is a tiny, tiny fraction of what went out there. And so we are on the hook for the majority of it. So, yeah, we've got to audit the Fed. We've got to find out what they're doing. And if they don't go along with it, it is time to revoke their charter, as has happened before historically, and for the U.S. government to issue its new currency free from a central private bank. We need to pay attention to what Thomas Jefferson warned us. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we're talking about the economy. And there's so much stuff that's going on right now that is really, it just makes you scratch your head and say, what are they thinking? What are they thinking? We're finding out now that our economy, the hardest hit segment of our economy are the technical workers, technicians, engineers, scientists, the people who would be most involved in manufacturing new products that we could sell to other countries to reverse the trade imbalance, as daunting a task as that would be. Now, some of you have probably heard about the H-1B visas And I know I'm going to get emails and phone calls about this, because when I was talking yesterday about how California could solve some of its budgetary problems by simply not spending money on the illegal aliens anymore, and I got all these nasty messages, you're a racist and you're a xenophobe and you're Hitler and you're this and all these other terrible things that they're saying. And yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to be practical here. You know, I'm a pragmatist is really the bottom line. Now we're finding out these H-1B workers, these are highly skilled, highly trained, often better than Americans because of the deficiencies in our educational system. They are allowed to come into the United States and take jobs that would, you know, that need to be filled. Now, when this H-1B program first started, there was a shortage of these qualified workers, because the economy was booming. Silicon Valley couldn't find enough people to do what they were doing. They said, oh, let's start bringing all of these people in from other countries. And they did that, and that was all well and good. Now we're in a situation where there are more H-1B workers in the United States on these visas than there are unemployed qualified Americans. In other words, if all of these H-1B visas were to be terminated and these individuals go back to the country in which they're citizens, because they're not citizens here, we would have enough jobs for all of the American technical workers who are currently sitting on unemployment. And I know I'm going to get a lot of, you know, negative flack about this, but we've got to start looking at, we've got to stop being so politically correct, and we've got to start looking at what is going to work to get our country going back together. And this gets back to that issue I've been making about how we could turn the U.S. economy around. We just have to give up this addiction to going around the world killing brown people, and we could balance the federal budget, because right now half of the federal budget pretty much is going to some form of making things that kill people. And if we just give that up, if we say, okay, we made a mistake in Iraq, here, your country back. We made a mistake in Afghanistan, here, your country back. Let's stop bombing Pakistan. Let's stop bombing Somalia. Let's let South Korea worry about North Korea. It's not our problem. It's the other side of the world. And we bring our kids home and we say, okay, how do we fix this country? Forget about going around the world acting like we're still the number one superpower, because we're not anymore. We are not. Yes, we have the ability to kill pretty much everybody else on the planet, but that's not what makes a superpower. It makes us psychotic, makes us the world's biggest terrorist state. But being a superpower means being a moral leader. And right now, with the torture scandal still hanging over all of us, we are not moral anything in the eyes of the rest of the world. Now, speaking of our declining morality and principles, and this is for all those people out there saying, well, you know, the terrorists hate us for our freedoms. The Supreme Court yesterday ruled that suspects can be interrogated by police without a lawyer present. This is a huge, huge blow to the civil protections we have in this country to protect the rights of the accused, to make sure they get a fair trial. And the Supreme Court basically threw that out, saying that it's unreasonable to have to make the police wait to talk to somebody just because they've asked for a lawyer. And they had this whole rationale. Folks, we know what's going on here. The reason for a lawyer to be present during questioning isn't to lawyerize the questioning itself. It's to keep watch on the police, that they don't try and make an inappropriate bargain, or they make a bargain they have no intention of keeping, or they do something else where there needs to be an impartial witness, or at least a witness who's on the side of the accused. And so now interrogations are going to be a bunch of cops and the accused, and it's going to be their word against his what happened. Don't forget, it wasn't that long ago they sentenced a sheriff to 12 years for waterboarding confessions out of his prisoners when there was no lawyer present. So this is an absolute nightmare. We talk about, oh, the terrorists are coming in, they're going to destroy our country, and they're going to knock down our buildings, and they're going to make our milk curdle, and they're going to steal socks out of our dryers and everything like that. Who is really destroying what America stands for? Who has really, over all the years since 9/11, who has done the most real damage to everything that America is supposed to stand for? to our moral leadership in the world. It's our own government. They're spying on us without warrants. They're reading our email. They're listening to our phone calls. And now we can be interrogated by the police without a lawyer present, courtesy of the United States Supreme Court. Everything that the terrorists were supposed to hate us for, we know that was all nonsense to begin with, but everything that we're supposed to be, that the terrorists were supposed to hate us for, is gone. It is gone. This is historic in a very, very negative sense. This is pretty much the death of the Bill of Rights. It's amazing. All right, we're going to go into this Korean situation here because everybody's cranking this up, and this gives Secretary of State Hillary Clinton a chance to talk tough and say, "Where there are consequences for doing things we don't approve of." Well, North Korea knows that. North Korea knows that if the U.S. doesn't like you, they're going to invade. And North Korea realizes that the United States only invades people who don't have nuclear weapons. So with all due respect, actually I don't have much for her, but with all due respect to the Secretary of State, she can bluster and bluff all she wants. The United States is not going to go to war into North Korea because we don't attack countries that actually have nuclear weapons. We attack countries that don't have nuclear weapons. We'll say that they do. We did that in Iraq. We're doing that in Iran. We'll say they're a big, hairy danger, but the reality is we're only whooping on countries that we know, or thought we knew, really couldn't fight back effectively. And the reason North Korea is making all the provocative statements they're making right now is they're sending a very clear signal. They are confident that their nuclear weapons will work when they're supposed to. They are confident their rockets will deliver them to where they're supposed to go. This is the reason for the tough talk. It is not reckless bravado. North Korea is sending a very clear message saying, we will have no more talk about invasions and wars and naval blockades. Just leave us alone. The problem is, we have a U.S. government which, like the Nazis, is only able to perpetuate itself by constantly invading other countries. Or like Rome, if you want to go back to Rome. The Central Empire can survive financially only as long as more and more outlying provinces are conquered and taxed. That's what's going on right now. We're not going to attack North Korea because North Korea can inflict serious harm back on us. We're going to whoop on little tiny helpless nations like Somalia and Pakistan. Little places like that where we can, you know, kill 97 civilians to try and get at two Taliban people, including something like, 60 women and 20 kids? That just happened in the last couple of days. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Korea, and we're going to talk about what I just mentioned in Afghanistan and the God factor in the Iraq War. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here today. We're talking about North Korea. We're talking about the dust-up, about the nuclear weapons. And you need to remember, here's the situation. First of all, you need to remember North Korea got their nuclear technology from, ta-da, the United States of America. Not only did a U.S. company, which, and Donald Rumsfeld was on their board of directors, provide North Korea with two light water nuclear reactors, which are capable of making weapons-grade plutonium, the U.S. government gave North Korea about $90 million of your tax dollars with which to fund the projects. And this was when everybody was all buddy-buddy, you know, some years ago. And this is the same thing that we did with Saddam Hussein. The United States sold Saddam his biological weapons, his chemical weapons. They financed Gerald Bull's supergun. And this seems to be a recurring tactic. We'll give some maniac government a bunch of dangerous technology, wait a couple years and say, oh, look, that dangerous government has got dangerous technology. We must invade and kill them and destroy it and take it back. And you, the American taxpayer, get to pay for it both. You get to pay for when it gets sent over there, and you get to pay when we send kids over there to blow it all up again. And it's the same tactic. If we didn't want North Korea to have nuclear weapons, don't give them the technology to make nuclear weapons. Now, the other aspect of this is that North Korea had previously suspended its weapons program on the condition that the United States keep certain promises regarding the lifting of sanctions and some additional non-military assistance to North Korea, because their economy is not doing all that well either. The United States reneged on the deal. They broke their word. Ooh, big shock there, right? And so North Korea said, okay, you know, if you're not going to keep your promises, then, you know, the deal is off and we're going to go back to developing nuclear weapons, because that's the best way to prevent from being invaded. That's the reason you have these kind of weapons, is to deter aggression. That's how we were sold. That's how our parents were sold. $5 trillion worth of nuclear development, back when $1 trillion was really a lot of money. It was not to go out and attack other people, even though we are the only country to actually use nuclear weapons on another country. But it was justified because it was a deterrent. Nobody would dare attack us while we had a nuclear capability with which to counterattack. North Korea is thinking exactly the same thing. They don't want anybody attacking them. It's a reasonable assumption. Nobody wants to be attacked and invaded and conquered. It's a very unpleasant experience. It's mass murder wrapped in a pretty flag, is really what it is. So that's why North Korea is developing these weapons. They're not going to use them to attack South Korea or Japan or anything like that. Nobody just hauls off and hurls nuclear bombs at anybody else without having a really good reason to do so. So, the situation here, though, with North Korea, I mean, you know, it is escalating. Everybody's trying to rattle sabers. Like I said, I think North Korea's provocative statements are intended to send a message of confidence that they have a working weapon system now and that everybody else should back off. The problem is you're dealing with individuals who can't back down once they've, you know, gone into high dudgeon mode and, you know, they're up there standing and saying, we're going to be tough. And so you get into this chest-thumping mode, which looks really silly on Hillary Clinton, and nobody wants to back down because then they start looking weak, and you wind up with people just sort of glaring at each other. Meanwhile, North Korea is apparently, according to a report we're getting out of South Korea, North Korea is saying that the 1953 truce that ended, or at least temporarily halted, the Korean War is no longer in effect if South Korea starts blockading North Korean harbors, which they've been talking about doing to prevent the acquisition of further weapons technology by North Korea. Like, it's not going to come down from China on the rail system or from Russia over land. Naval blockade is really not going to do anything except make it look like they're trying to do something. Now, getting over to Afghanistan, I mentioned this earlier in the show and I wanted to cover it again. A human rights group has confirmed that the United States, in recent raids in Afghanistan, intending to target two Taliban militants, and we don't know if they got the militants or not, in the process killed 97 civilians, and I had the numbers backwards earlier. 21 of the fatalities were women, 65 were children. The U.S. government killed 65 children trying to get at two Taliban militants. We don't know if they got the militants or not. Talk about disproportionate force. You know, we're told these little drones have got these wonder weapons and they're precision targeting. No, they're not. They're still going in and blowing up everything around the target and killing a lot of innocent people. All that money put into these weapons with the promise that we're only going to kill the guilty people. Obviously, we got scammed yet again. Now, something that started coming out this last week, and I want to finish on this one, because I had a very spirited debate with one of the regular members at WhatReallyHappened.com over whether wars are primarily started by the devoutly religious, or who pretend to be devoutly religious, or if atheists start more wars. And so in light of that, we're getting this story out of the European press, where French President Chirac is now reporting in his recently done biography that Bush told Chirac that the Iraq War was intended to bring on the apocalypse. You know how I like to joke around there that the Christian Zionists or the fanatical right-wing religious people are going around saying if we help Israel start World War III, Jesus is going to come down and invite us up to the big house. It's true. According to French President Chirac, Bush really believed this, or at least expressed this idea to President Chirac, that this was a holy war, it was a crusade, that God told him to go and attack Iraq. If you are the family member of somebody who died or was crippled in Iraq, you need to understand and communicate to them, if they're still alive, what they suffered because one man was hearing voices in his head from the little guy in the cloud that nobody else can see or hear, who talked only to George Bush and said, go stomp on Saddam, and anything that you do to get that war going is blessed by God. Now we're hearing from the British press that Tony Blair was basically of the same thing, that he's believed strongly in his Christian faith, that all of the attacks in Kosovo, Sierra Leone, and Iraq was all part of the Christian battle of good against evil and making lives better. Yeah, the lives of everybody in the Middle East were made better on this one, even here in the U.S., as our wounded come home. They really talked themselves into thinking that the war in Iraq was a holy crusade. This is why, in the United States at least, we're supposed to have a separation of church and state. So we don't have some child molester in a funny robe and a really weird-looking hat running around saying, God wants us to go kill those people over there. There's a wonderful movie out called Kingdom of Heaven. It was directed by Ridley Scott. Orlando Bloom stars in it. And despite that, it's a pretty good movie. Liam Neeson does a really good job in there as well. And there's this wonderful moment toward the end of the movie during the siege of Jerusalem by Saladin, where the Balin character, the Orlando Bloom character, says, if you try and invade the city of Jerusalem, I'll burn down all the religious sites. And Saladin says, I wonder if it would not be better if you did. And I think that's the best line in the entire movie. So many people have died over this war to decide whose deity has the largest genitalia. And it is time to stop. We're in the third millennium. We've got spacecraft leaving our solar system heading for the cosmos. We've built computers. We've cracked DNA. It's time to stop living our lives according to myths and legends. And on that note, we're going to sign off here. We'll be back tomorrow night at 5 p.m. Thursday. And until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, eat lots of cinnamon. Drive carefully. Please mention us on all of your social networking sites and your local AM and FM stations. And Aloha America.